Welcome to the second edition of the Business of Collaboration podcast. In this podcast, we try and answer the following questions. What is innovation? How do people collaborate and work together? Who is behind the most innovative ideas, technology, and knowledge? We are curious about people. How do they innovate? How do they create a new technology or acquire new knowledge? We give them a voice and a platform to share their stories because they are superheroes.
This is your host, Jara Pascual, founder of NoCo and CollabWith. Today, we have the pleasure to talk to Mike Follman, CEO and co-founder of QuitBiz and consultant at the Institute for Knowledge and Innovation at the Southeast Asia Center. This podcast, Business of Collaboration, is an example on how to change and adapt your business to the COVID-19 crisis. Mike Follman has created an easy-to-use application to educate the population in Malaysia on fighting COVID-19. With tips and norms to stay safe, to wash your hands, he is using his technology, a smart mobile learning app, to fight COVID-19. And he's looking for users for his app. Do you want to know more? Listen to our podcast with Mike Follman. Welcome to the Business of Collaboration podcast. Thank you, Mike Follman, for this podcast. You are now in Thailand.
I am. Hello, good morning.
And we are talking with you because you are creating a movement for fight COVID-19, because these times are quite challenging. We were discussing right now for startups, but as well for everyone. And you there in Asia, you are living cases as well of your friends from China and Thailand, we were discussing now. How are you first?
Yeah, I'm okay. I'm currently in Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia. So I live in Thailand and Bangkok, but also in Malaysia and Kuala Lumpur. And we have here in Malaysia shutdown. So that means there's not many flights available. Basically, the borders are closed. And like everywhere in the world, the people are scared and they worry a lot about the future, about the business, and how to protect themselves and their families from that virus that is out there, from this COVID-19. And as you mentioned correctly, my startup, QuizBiz, we build mobile learning systems, engaging mobile knowledge management systems that can be used to create awareness, but also to train people how to protect themselves, how to prevent spreading the virus. But maybe we can also help in the moment to maybe fight the mental challenges that people have that are, I would say, in isolation, maybe to support them and maybe to open up a communication channel for them on the mobile phones where they can share maybe their knowledge and their experience with others. So that's basically what we are doing. That's why we started about 3 weeks ago, such a movement, fight COVID-19. But unfortunately, as this movement is initiated by some foreigners here in Malaysia, in Asia, we not yet got the buy-in from a government or from an NGO. We are still in discussions with the Red Cross, with an organization which is called Mercy Malaysia, which is a large NGO bundling different initiatives. But we wait actually every day for their support to roll it out in a larger scale. So currently we are only reaching a few hundred, like 800, 900 people with it. But the system is able to reach even 100,000 or a million people. So that's what we're currently doing. So I'm okay. I have food at home. I'm safe.
Now you said like in your place, nobody can go out.
Yeah, we have a movement restriction. We have a movement restriction order from the government. Even the army is enforcing that with roadblocks in the streets. And the the property or the security of the property is advised that everybody has to stay in their rooms or in their apartments. So that means the common spaces in our compound are not used, which is a little bit difficult because in this compound it's also a co-working space. So many people have small rooms, maybe only 12, 15 square meters. Some have no windows because they just here to work and in the co-working space, and they're just going basically to their room to sleep. It's a kind of startup community here.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very tough for them to just stay in their very small room without a window and cannot go out. Yeah, and as I mentioned, the Wi-Fi is also hardly working in the moment because there are too many people using in the moment the internet.
Yeah.
And so it's a challenge for everyone. It's a challenge for the technology. And yeah, there are some of the people here, Europeans, we have about 150 in the building. They're from Italy, they're from Spain, they worry a lot about their families, they are permanently on Skype, talking with their people, and they actually wish to go home, but they cannot, and they do not know where it's safe, or it's actually nowhere safe.
And this is why you change your company strategy to focus on fighting COVID-19.
Yeah, we actually...
Your app, it was doing other things, so now you close all the other... opportunities for your app and focus on fighting COVID-19.
Yeah, as a small startup, we basically work on a project base for governments and for larger organizations like UNESCO or UNEP. So that means we build on a platform that we developed in the last 5 years, different knowledge management and training solutions for organizations, which are customized for them. Unfortunately, in the moment, due to this situation that we are in, business development is not possible. So that means we cannot pitch, we cannot apply for projects, and many of the activities from the governments, from the grants, from these international organizations are on hold, postponed, and the budgets are, I would say, deprioritized because they are going away from, for example, training or learning or awareness building to emergency activities that are now related to the virus, which I can completely understand. So this gives us, on one hand side, a lot of pressure, economic pressure, because like every company, like every independent organization, we have to pay our rent, we have to pay our salaries, we have to maintain our technology. And without revenues, this is not that easy. But on the other hand side, we have also now some time to create or to innovate in our system. And the last 3 weeks, we built basically a mobile micro learning tool for COVID-19. So before, when you downloaded our application Uniquiz in the app stores, it was an application which is a trivia game, and it was used for companies with their login to train their employees. So it could be personalized by an organization, but it's basically one platform in the internet, in the app stores, that can be customized to a particular project and to a particular company. And when you're now downloading the system, it's a COVID-19 environment, particular for Asia, particularly for Malaysia, where you have content about emergency numbers here in Malaysia, about hospitals who are experienced in treating corona cases, where you have a kind of learning program for kids, how they can learn to wash their hands with some videos, like a hand washing song that they can sing, which is about 30 seconds that they wash their hands carefully. And you have also some updated news from reliable sources, from the WHO, from Johns Hopkins Hospital, because like in every country where we currently overwhelmed with all that information, there's also a lot of fake news, wrong information, and especially the people which are maybe have a lower education level, which are maybe poorer, and these are mostly the most vulnerable in the situation. They rely often on news that are not qualified, they are not validated, and when we can reach them with a mobile phone, I think we can contribute a little bit to better the situation. But as I mentioned, we're currently talking with NGOs that focus on that vulnerable, on that urban poor, for example, to distribute this information and to use this tool to educate them and to give them opportunity to contact the health authorities when there is an emergency case. But so far, we've not reached out to that communities directly because there's simply the organization in between missing. So it's an initiative for foreigners. It was, I would say, positively meant from our side. So we tried to donate our knowledge and our innovation capability, but it's not yet effective in place.
And what do you need to be effective place?
Yeah, we have to get it out the people via the media that they understand. So we have to basically get it out maybe via government channels in the housing areas, in the communities, maybe with posters. Maybe we have to even put some advertisement in Facebook, and we have to use it in schools. We have actually built a tool particular to educate the kids that are now at home because the schools are closed to learn about the virus. But as I said, initiative is about 4 or 5 people, even if they are very much passionate about it and they spend a lot of time on that, and not be effective, particular here in Asia, when you are foreigners. Sorry to say, but the situation is we send a letter to the Minister of Health, we send a letter to WHO, we get some comments, that's great what you are doing, we are discussing that in our teams. And then we did not hear from them anymore, even if we ask. Yeah. So it's a little bit frustrating on one hand side, but on the other hand side, we are not giving up. Yeah. So I have in the afternoon again a call with an organization. I mentioned that already, with the Mercy Malaysia, which is an umbrella for many NGOs, and they have now a proposal from our side to do that together under their name, under their brand, but using our technology. We can launch within hours, yeah, but we need a go because we need also licenses, because you cannot simply distribute an application with those kind of informations without having the kind of let's say agreement with the government that you are allowed to do that.
And for instance, your application could be applied in other countries in Europe?
Yes, it could be. It's in the moment available in English and in Bahasa, but yes, in English, it could be used for prevention, like you get information there about the cases, about the news, but these are now particular focused on Malaysia. If there would be an interest in another country to use this system, it will take maybe about 24 hours to customize it for the regional, for the region, and to transfer maybe local news into the system, to transfer the local language into the system, and even the emergency context, because this is maybe what makes the system most effective, because we can train people with questions, with quizzes, with a kind of trivia about the local regulations. As you know, in different countries, in different even provinces or states, we have different regulations, and people do not have often the right informations, or they cannot memorize it. They really do not know about them in depth. But if you ask questions, and this is the core of our learning technology, action learning, we're using questions and inquiry-based learning methodology to engage people. With this technology, we can find out what people know and what they don't know, and then we can address this knowledge gap. That's what we are doing, and that's why I think it's a very good contribution to the education sector, because if you get the kids to know more about how to behave, how to prevent, and what to take care of, they could maybe be the, let's say, the supporter of their families, of their grandparents, and transfer those informations in the family. Because the situation here in Asia, if everybody who listened to that podcast and traveled here, is very different from Europe. So you have here families that live maybe with three generations or sometimes four generations in one room, in one small room. So most of the life happens outside. So they have often no kitchen or no proper kitchen at home. They eat at the food stalls outside. And in the evening when they're coming home, they sleep with five or six people in a small room. The kids maybe on the floor with some mats, sleeping mats, and maybe the grandparents in a bed. So it's very, very difficult to prevent infection here. And it's very, very difficult to, I would say, safeguard the elderly, because they are maybe the most vulnerable in this situation. So there's a lot of challenges here in Asia that we do not think about in Europe, and particular for the urban poor. It's a very, very difficult situation here, because there is no social state like we have it in Germany. There is no health insurance for free. Yeah? And those people maybe already did not get paid, because they get maybe paid on a weekly basis or even on a daily basis. Yeah? So there's a lot of trouble, a lot of challenges for those people. And I think information and knowledge can help a little bit to mitigate those.
This podcast is in collaboration with ISPIN, a community of members from research, industry, consulting, and the public sector. Join CollabWith at the 2020 ISPIN Innovation Conference in Berlin and help Europe's leading innovation management community address today's critical challenges of global importance.
How can you describe the flexibility of your online learning app? Because if you can change so fast,
it's basically,
you're flexible.
Yes, it's basically an ecosystem. So that means the application or the application comes with a web backend which customizes the app for particular uses to train people or to engage people. So what it does is basically there are two kinds of information that we can provide. One are somehow push informations, and the other ones are pull information. So what are push informations? Push informations are, for example, notifications that you get, yeah? Like a WhatsApp message or LINE message. And just imagine those notifications are questions that you have to answer. So with these notifications, we engage people. Now, this is one functionality of the system, which is around those push messages, activities, questions, quizzes, assessments, surveys, everything that is interaction based on questions. So we have this tool, we have this environment, and whatever questions you want to ask, whatever information you want to distribute, whether this is in education, mathematics, physics, chemistry, English, or if it is in your job, hygienic standards, or customer service, or work safety knowledge, you decide about that. So in the moment when you give us the material and information that you want to have as push messages out, my team help you to create these micro-learning quizzes, to reach out to the people and to engage them in an interaction based on questions. So we get to know what they know and what they don't know. This is this area of push notifications, push questions, engagement. And the other area, which are pull informations, are basically informations which are distributed in the system via topics, learning topics that include any kind of media that you want to share with people. That can be YouTube videos, that can be own videos, that can be links to your repositories of your manuals. So you basically use, I would say, this pull informations as a knowledge repository to provide all kind of informations, like, for example, in a school, the course syllabus, the course content, the PowerPoint presentations of the teachers, additional articles, additional literature, all in that system. So this mobile system is built on these two elements, push and pull informations, which are combined together, and both of these areas can be customized within hours for a particular company, for a particular project or user case, the only thing that we need is content as input and the audience. And that's what we did for COVID-19. So we put in the information topics a lot of knowledge from our medical team. So we have two doctors who contributed informations in that full section with WHO information, John Hopkins, CDC information, so very validated and updated content. And on the other hand side, we had a team from a medical school from a university to create notifications, questions, and quizzes. We do not have so many in there, but a few, which are used to train and to educate people about the virus by using notifications that are sent out and questions to engage the people and to, I would say, give them the opportunity to discover in a trivia game what they know and what they don't know and to get smarter about the virus. So this is basically what we are doing, and we are so fast because it's a platform. So it's a universal platform, a little bit like a Swiss knife, and you have to decide what you want to do with it. It has a lot of functionalities, but without your ability, your knowledge that comes in, it's just a tool that you have in your pocket, but it's not effective.
And this is why it's so effective, as well, yeah. A way of flexibility, but as well the way like the learning is based on micro questions.
Yes. Yeah, it's micro learning, the system, or we call it smart mobile learning system. Mm-hmm. It's a combination out of different areas. So it's about instructional design, it's about knowledge management, pedagogy, but we use a concept that is developed in the early 2000s by Stanford University. It's called inquiry-based learning, because we even use it in the classroom or in schools, that students creating content for other students. So we always trying to make the knowledge as easy to understand for the audience as possible. And we have very high success when the audience or when people from the audience creating questions for other people in the same age, using the same language, having the same background. It's much easier to adapt. It's much better to understand for people when this is done on a kind of peer-to-peer level instead of hierarchic information flow.
Do you have other use cases in mind where they could be used to help address societal challenges?
Yes, we did. We did actually quite a lot with the UNEP, with the United Nations Environmental Program, on circular economy, where we train policymakers and people in the industry that are responsible for circular economy, which is a very broad field actually, about the activity there. And one of the elements was even innovation, where we tried to show them how, for example, design thinking can support the circular economy sector, because often you have a lot of companies in this area that are government owned, or they are, the government plays a major role, and they are, sorry to say, often not really so innovative, and they lack a little bit of methodologies. Yeah? And so bringing innovation, for example, to those people, knowledge about innovation, about ways, methods, processes, was a very effective way of doing it. And we experienced that within a week or 2 weeks workshop, their knowledge increased via a pre-test and post-test of more than 50%. So the people coming to that workshop, they really know more because they interacted via this mobile application, but also in the courses with the knowledge. Yeah, because it's not only someone showing a PowerPoint presentation and people writing it down in a notebook and never reviewing their notes. It's about interacting with the information, interacting with the knowledge, maybe competing with others in the class. That is what is possible today when you use such kind of concepts of smart mobile learning. So that was UNEP. We did similar thing with UNESCO on plastic pollution, and we use it in schools for, let me say, for, I don't want to say underprivileged people, but You know, in here in Asia, you have a lot of vocational students, like you have that in Europe also, like people who are not going to university, not going to college. They learn, for example, mechatronics to become a mechanic or work in hospitality industry and whatever. So they go to vocational school. Those people are often from not so privileged families. Yeah? They cannot afford to go to school. So they also come from families who do not read, who do not have a good educational background. Those kids, which are now maybe 14, 15, 16, they are not adaptive to traditional learning methods. It's very unlikely that they can read a textbook. It's very unlikely that you get their attention for more than whatever a minute or two. So you have to think about other forms. And we trained with our mobile learning system, with our smart mobile learning concept.
It's impressive.
Hydraulics. And we trained teachers, more than 200, 150 teachers alone in five colleges about methodologies, and they created for 28 subjects in Thai language content for our app with quite a success over 6 months. There was actually the rate of what is it called, the F grade, so the failure grade was reduced from about 20% now to under 10, which was really good. And in average, the grades were about 20% better than before. So maybe a D student become a C student and a C student become a B student because they simply know more, they interact more with the material, and that results in better grades. So as simple as that. It's a process, and this process is interacting with knowledge by using our favorite device, which is a mobile.
Yep. And in our other phone call, we were discussing well about the use case of women investment.
Yes, that's
and to use a mobile phone and your application to teach investors to be more diverse in their portfolio and how to be diverse, or maybe to teach them.
maybe that's what, as I said, knowledge is very universal. That's, I don't want to be too abstract, but we use a similar concept for banking industry, for risk management, for investment decisions, to give bankers a basic understanding about certain frameworks, also for corporate governance. And we're currently working on a concept for ESG, for environmental social governance, which is also interesting for those investors, for banks, because today every business has to somehow keep in mind social and environmental factors, and the investment policies, the ratings, the stock exchange, for example, change, and they request reporting on sustainability. And for that, we can provide learning frameworks. We can use a mobile phone to do that. So in this case, we can support investors in getting a better understanding about maybe topics that not part of the traditional finance studies, yeah, because they have to learn that the world is a little bit less economic, it's more social, it's more environmental and complex, because each area affects the other areas. So that would be one thing for investors, to really use that tool to create more, I don't want to say diversity, but how broad today decisions are, because it's not any more pure economic decision making. Decision making that has to balance economic and social environmental impacts, and try to be human centric, try to make the best for the people, create the best for the people and for the planet, and possibly even make it economically valuable and useful. So I think this is from the investment perspective. But let me emphasize on one more thing, because we talked about women entrepreneurship.
Yes.
And I mentioned that particularly here in Asia, I see a lot of very essential business for the society, like food stalls, which are 80-90% owned and run by females. And those women often are alone, maybe with one assistant, maybe with a family member on the store, going out in the morning, preparing the food, going to the market, doing those things. And they have a very, very important function in the Asian society. Because as I mentioned before, people do not cook at home. They are used to eat maybe in the streets from those small food stalls and from those people. So if you are an entrepreneur, a single female entrepreneur who runs such a shop, you know very much, or you know everything about your business. You know your clients, you know your activities. But you could not spend even half a day a year on your personal development, your personal learning. You do not know so much about taxes because you have to rely on people. You do not know so much about, for example, plastic pollution or circular economy. You just buy the things that you need for your job, for your business, as you do it the last 20 or 15 years. And if this is plastic, if this are straws or bags or whatever, you do not really distinguish whether this is biodegradable or not, whether this is good for the environment or not, because you simply do not have the time, the knowledge, the access to knowledge to source information. And you have not really, besides of the other maybe small entrepreneurs that are around you, a kind of community where you can get relevant information for you. And in this particular case, we provide information, for example, for those, I would say, female single entrepreneurs about maybe particular for them, for example, on food hygiene, for example, on plastic pollution, for example, about taxation policies for those kind of small entrepreneurs. This is not much to know, but it's better than knowing nothing about it, because this gives them the opportunity, even if they have only 5 minutes a day time while they are maybe commuting or while they are maybe in a break, just use their smartphone and to review something in their language, maybe with simple illustrations, maybe watching a 3 minute video and learning something that they then can discuss with the other people in their food stall or maybe with the other people in their environment. And this is how learning happens. So it's somehow initiated by one or two people who know, and they communicate that knowledge with others. We're using this micro-learning, this push notifications, as I mentioned, to do that. And we had such a project on this micro-entrepreneurs about 2 years ago with an organization here who looks into women entrepreneurship in Asia. Unfortunately, the grant was just a project grant. So after 6 months, there was no sustainable project in there. But I think in this area, I would very much love to do something. Because those women are very much admirable. They are very vulnerable at the same time, because if they are, for example, now affected by such a virus, the whole business is down and possibly the whole family that is depending on that income is also at risk. So these are the things that I currently see. And to make it very simple also for your audience, for me, knowledge is the core of competitive advantage for companies in the moment. But also knowledge can help us to make our society better, because it can create a common understanding. Only people who know, only people who are willing to learn new things can understand that there is more than just personal egoism, that there is more, that there is a bigger picture. And we have to find a consensus to bring as many people together to make a change. And this is in times like those, we have to fight an enemy that we cannot see, that we do not know how strong it is, this virus. We really have to, I would say, group and align forces and find agreements over borders, over countries, over nations, and over people to create a common understanding, and knowledge can help. That is my, I would say, that's what I believe in, if I'm, I can share that with you. And I hope many people maybe make the right decisions in the moment, and they are willing to learn and to find alliances and partnerships.
Yeah, now we are going to the questions more about innovation, but as well about your life. So what is innovation for you?
I think it's a journey, right? So I think the interesting thing, I think the interesting thing when we talk about those matters is Let me share something. What I'm basically doing. So I work for the Institute of Knowledge Management and Innovation at Bangkok University as a consultant to do intersectoral collaboration, or to bring, for example, academics and companies and government together, and to find common sense. They are somehow all in their ivory tower, and they do not really, I would say, understand the other perspective. Yeah? So I think in this sense, for everybody who's in this innovation process, it is a personal journey where they discover and they learn from each other and together to find effective solutions and real life solutions by stepping in each other's shoes. So it was a very interesting experience that I usually do at workshops, when I say, okay, we make a role play. So on this table now, even if you're all government officers, just imagine now you are the C-level from a company for 1 hour. And now you have to think about when you would be a C-level of a company, what would be your motivators? What would be your requirements on, for example, the innovation ecosystem, on the collaboration with the government? And then on the other hand side, you tell the people in the corporate side to step into the shoes of the government and to understand, okay, if you are now the government, that would be what you're requesting from the company, and that would be what you're offering. And already after this hour, when they learn to change their perspectives, you will find out, first of all, that they do not understand very much about each other. But they have no understanding about what are the motivators, what are the initial, I would say, what are the starting points for thinking. And because they are so different in their ways that they think and that they maybe define results, it's very difficult to develop a consensus base. And as more they get the empathy, the more they get an understanding for the other perspective, as better solutions can be created. It's simple, but it's the same like we see in politics. Yeah, if there are, I would say, fights, if there are a lot of tensions between different parties and they do not work together and they do not sit together and they do not trust each other, you know, so society does not really work. But even if some parties build coalitions, they in maybe night-long or week-long meetings and discussions, they find and agree on a common sense, then this can be very, very impactful. So it's a process of better understanding by bringing people together. And that's what I'm maybe being a kind of advocate for in that field for innovation. But as I said, I see it as a journey. You never stop innovating, you never stop learning. And it's very much fun to do that together.
You are listening to the Business of Collaboration podcast, a production from CollabWith and the NoCo community. We are an online community helping businesses connect with experts to solve innovation challenges and create consortiums. We do this through a custom-built environment where academics, startups, and businesses collaborate to innovate and accelerate. Together, we break down the barrier between academics and the business world. Innovation has never been so accessible. And now, back to our podcast.
Because you mentioned already the collaboration, my next question was, what is collaboration for innovation?
Yes, yeah. I think this collaboration of bringing the different sectors together, bringing diverse groups together, is a key. I'm not sure if our listeners are familiar with the concept of a lean discovery. It's basically utilizing this double diamond approach, which you might know from design thinking, to discover and to bring diversity in workshops. So when we, for example, approaching a problem, we always trying to bring from different organizational departments, from different areas, people together in one room that usually never meet. Yeah? So you not have only the IT people or you have only the HR people. You have a completely interdisciplinary group there, maybe an engineer from the production and whatever, to solve that problem, because you need fresh and you need a kind of new aspects to find solutions for real life problems. So that's the collaboration is for me something that is can be solved with diversity and can be solved by fresh ideas coming often from outside. Yeah? But I'm very much supporting the kind of concept where companies solve their problems alone, maybe with some advice from outside, inviting external advisors, but maybe utilizing, first of all, the knowledge that they have in their own organization, which is already very diverse, because today's organizations, they have hundreds or thousands of people, and only a few are always involved in innovation. That is the unfortunate truth, is that not everybody is an innovator. Innovation is still often happening behind closed doors. Maybe we have to make something like open innovation happen.
What is the thing you are most proud of?
Of what I learned in my life. Yeah. You know, I worked about 20 years in large-scale organizations in China and Europe, and I learned a lot. And I had the chance to start with 42, a second career as a consultant, as a lecturer, and then becoming a startup CEO and a co-founder. So I learned a lot of things in my life, and I'm very proud of all the people that I met during that times, and all of, I'm proud of learning from those people, having the chance to learn from those people, and to be very frank, even the situation that we're having now in with COVID-19 and all the calls that I got in the last few weeks and days from friends from all over the world, that helped me a lot to say come to manage my days, even when you are now locked up. And I think many people are the same, so that you can be proud of to have some friends, to have some people who care of you, and that you can be a friend about them. I think that is something that I'm personally now maybe I don't want to say proud of, but what I now recognized, and what makes me really happy in the moment.
And the failure you were learning the most from?
So trust is always a two-edged sword, you know? So you So I always trust a lot to people. And then sometimes I have to be maybe a little bit more, cautious in those matters. Because also in the past, I always believed in people. But it not always worked out. So I think my biggest failure is that I'm... I always think people can do, but you never really 100% know the motivation when you're not very close to someone. That was maybe the hardest learnings for me. That trust is something that can also affect you in a negative way. Too much trust.
Yeah, that I can relate to this as well. So now more personal questions, super quick. Mike, what is your favorite place for holidays?
Oh, I very much, you know, when I see in the moment what's happening in Italy, I'm so sad, you know, for me, Northern Italy and the south of Spain, particularly Barcelona, are my favorite places, because I'm very much interested in culture and in art and all that wonderful history that you have in that places. I'm very think about those people. So I'm very much a European traveler. Even I live in Asia, I value that more. Yeah. And I love Italian food too. So.
And what is your favorite music?
I'm now, you know, when I'm listening, when I'm now closed up here at my home, I started to relax with Norah Jones, you know, some easy going jazz music, right? So,
yes.
You know, so something, you know, not very much exciting, yeah, but gives you a kind of relaxed and chilled feeling, because I think that is what is in the moment very much important. Chill, yes. To come down, to be patient.
Are you listening to podcasts?
Some of them, you know, in Germany, we have this in the moment, the NDR podcast from that famous Professor Drosten. He is a virologist, mm-hmm. in the Berlin Charité, and he has actually every day a podcast for 40 minutes talking about the news about COVID. That is what I'm listening to. And before, I used to listen to some podcasts about management, about leadership, and also about innovation. And for sure, I will now listening more to your podcast as my time allows. But I'm very much a, can I tell you, documentary fan. Yes, I watch a lot of these documentaries in the evening to relax. I don't have a television, so I watch them always on my smartphone or on my laptop. But I'm very much into Netflix documentations, and also there are other some repositories which are very very, very good knowledge in there, like National Geographic and those kind of things. Very much admire what the journalists are doing.
And which person you would like to interview here in this podcast?
Yeah, I to be very honest on that, maybe you invite someone who is in a responsible position in the medical field, in the emergency area in the moment. Mm-hmm. When all that is over, maybe this person can describe how they, in that very, very small time windows that we had to innovate their processes, had to innovate the whole structure of their hospitals to manage these challenges that we are having now with this virus, with this disease out there. Because what those people doing in the moment in the medical field, amazing. So I think this is something where we have to applaud to all of them. And they had to innovate, because they had to make sure, for example, just a very simple thing, you know, the hospital is not only for people with COVID, it's not empty. You have normal patients there, you have normal things in the ICU, you have the people with a heart disease, with whatever, diabetes, something coming there. And now you have to make sure from your whole structure, from your whole process, maybe with a hospital of 1,000 people, that everybody who is maybe infected with COVID is treated separately to protect the others, but to still provide the services to this person. So these are a lot of innovation challenges that those people in the hospital and in the medical field had to face during the last weeks and days. And I think they did a great job in many ways, and we can learn a lot for everything that is related to innovation from those subject matter experts.
Yeah, that's a very good question. And we had a podcast with Professor John Besant, because now he's doing research on crisis-driven innovation.
Excellent, yeah, excellent.
Which is now super important, because it's true, like, we start the podcast talking about how a startup, they have to pivot and adapt and change.
I think I had the chance, I had the chance to listen to John about 3 weeks ago in Bangkok on a conference that we attended together. And he's an amazing person. And I think this crisis management and the innovation in emergency cases is maybe the most challenging subject in the moment, because it affects societies as a whole.
Yes, and sometimes it's not easy to see. Like, we have to change and adapt in this crisis, and the crisis sometimes is a big opportunity.
Part of innovation is creative thinking, yeah, and that is something that is you cannot simply order people to be creative. Yeah, so it does not work that if you have a class on creativity, you cannot say, okay, now we have creativity class from 9 to 10. Let's be creative and come up with ideas. It doesn't work like that. So you have to develop mindsets. You have to give people methods You have to give people ideas how they can maybe think and approach problems in a different way. And I think John is an expert in that field, and has especially for startups, because startups often address opportunities in a society, in an economic field that were unseen, that are not yet discovered. So startups and entrepreneurial activities addressing basically needs of a society that were before maybe untapped. That's often the case. Like, for example, when you look about Grab or Uber and those things, what happens now with mobility in the last 5 years or 6 years, that was a complete new area that was always there since we have cars, but nobody addressed it before. And those startups found that niche, found that area, and created a complete new business model on that. Yeah? And the same is what we are trying to do in the mobile learning field. We have the mobile phones out there. Unfortunately, we use a mobile phone mostly not really purposeful. We upload photos of food, we watch photos of food. Yeah. Yeah. But what do we really do productive for ourselves besides of using the calendar or maybe watching or listening to a podcast or maybe doing some emails for our work or learning on the job? Yeah. Not many companies did not yet discover that. So most of the learning is still e-learning. It's not mobile learning. So there are a lot of opportunities in there, and I think innovators can help to tap in those kind of untapped areas and create solutions that maybe helps the society to become better and people to develop.
Thank you, Bike. I think this podcast is very important. And we have to be aware, like, this virus has not cultures or borders, and we have to be creative, as you have this app. So you change your business model, you change your and adapt to fight the COVID-19.
I think everybody can contribute.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the points. How we can help from our business perspective to this crisis.
Yeah, I wish I would be a doctor and I can go to the hospital and help people, but I can't. So I can just help them with a small thing that I can contribute, which is a little bit about organizing models.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Thank you very much, Shara, too. Have a good day and stay happy and healthy.
Yeah, you too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Business of Collaboration podcast. And remember, if you want to support what we do, then share, subscribe, and leave a review over on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Podcasts. You can find a summary of this podcast at podcast.collabweb.org. See you next week.